Shabbat Shalom, everyone who's joining us online as you're listening to this. We continue with our study of this teaching, The Loudest Silent Years in History. This teaching, I've got to give credit for it. I didn't write it. I'm only regurgitating and parroting what I've already heard and adding a little to it. This is from Rabbi Stephen Bernstein of Adat Derek Congregation in Florida. This is a teaching. This is one of the courses in the yeshiva. The reason for it is that if you don't know history and don't understand things, how something came about, you will be just lost and you won't know how to deal with stuff. If you've never seen a car until the first day you're at driver training and they set you in it, you have no idea how to even. You need some training just to know, okay, it has an engine. Oh, you turn the key or push the button. Okay, you hit the gas, hit the brake, hit the clutch. Okay, it has wheels. Oh, wow. That's basic. That's basic understanding so you don't get yourself killed or kill somebody. In-depth understanding is going to mechanical school and learning how everything works, not even how to fix it, how to diagnose issues, et cetera, et cetera. This is where we're diving into, is that level. This is lesson number 8, Alexander the Great and Shimon HaTzadik. This is where we're going to start getting into some real meat and potatoes of why did something happen. I can't tell you how many times on Facebook I see someone put something, just total factual, historical error, and then build upon it. And they end up with something that's just, it's so off. But they do it out of a, they didn't do it out of a place of trying to deceive somebody, or they did it because they didn't know. They didn't know any better. No, they've never had any training. They don't know where to look sometimes to even get information because there's just so much information out there. How do you even know where to start? So this is lesson number 8, Alexander and Shimon HaTzadik. In lesson number 7, we talked about Ezra. We talked about Nehemiah. They led the children of Israel from the diaspora. They went back to rebuild the temple. The first attempt didn't go so well. And we read through Ezra last time, I believe. The second attempt, it did it. There was more people. People were happier about it and more fired up, for lack of a term, to go about doing it. And sometimes it takes a small group to get something started. You know, I think about our congregation, we're a small group getting something started, but there'll be a day where people will say, you know, I've been watching you guys for a while, okay? I've seen you around. I've seen that you've passed the test of, okay, you didn't quit, you didn't just stop. You've maintained things, and they come and join. Well, this is what it was like. I see you guys out there, that little group of you going back to rebuild the temple. I see you had all kinds of problems, but you didn't just quit. But there are problems, and you've stayed, okay, we'll come and join you. So now they have a whole group of people coming to join. So when they left, we talked about this, when they left Babylon, they were under Persian rule. When they came back to Jerusalem, they brought back the Jewish study institutions from exile. They brought back the synagogue, Torah study, or we refer to it as Beit or Bet Midrash. They brought back the Beit, or they created and brought in the Beit Din, the court system, so you can, if you had a problem, you could resolve it in the community, not take it out to, you know, some little issue in the community, and all of a sudden you got to go to the court, the Babylonian court. I don't think so. They brought the court system back to Jerusalem, and they brought the Beit Tefillah, the prayer service. The prayer service, that, what did it do? It commemorated the temple service. But now they got back to Israel, and we talked about this idea. Well, wait a minute, we've got a temple now, and we have a synagogue. Do we keep them both? And that was the major divide between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The Sadducees said, nah, you know, we got the temple. We don't need the... The Pharisee says, wait a minute. Because we have synagogue now, we can come together. All this worshiping of foreign gods and assimilating into the nations, it's ended because of the synagogue. Do we want to stop that? Of course not. We go back to the same problems we had before. So this brings us to today. The children of Israel are back. The 20% of them, 80% of them are still in exile. 20% came back. You have 80% still in exile in Egypt and Babylon. These are millions of Jews. This isn't like one little family. The temple has been reestablished. Everything is operational. The synagogues are popping up everywhere. And things are wonderful in Israel. But something happens. We've seen one group take over another group, take over another group. Well, there was this young guy taking over Europe. He was about 25 years old, and his name was Alexander the Great. And he just plowed through Europe. So the Greek Empire began to conquer the Persian Empire. You guys remember Pac-Man?
Yes.
And what did Pac-Man do? This is how Alexander went through Europe. He went into, you know, Greece, Turkey, these areas there. And which way did he go? South. What's south of there? Israel. So he comes. He invades Syria in approximately 333 BCE. And he keeps going south. While he's going south and he gets to the walls of Jerusalem, there's been an ongoing issue going on in Israel. It's the issue between the Jews and the Samaritans. And they hated each other. And so I want to read something to you that talks about a man who I want you to make note of, because we'll talk about him a lot. His name is Shimon HaTzadik, Simon the Just. There have been more. Shimon is a popular name, and HaTzadik means the righteous. You know, we see Yaakov HaTzadik or James the Just. So that name HaTzadik, the righteous, we see that a lot. We want to talk about something that happened with Shimon HaTzadik. There are writings about him in the Talmud, Menachot 109b, Yoma 69a, in Josephus. I brought mine here, but there's not a whole lot I want to read out of there today. Josephus, book 12, chapter 5, talked about him. But I want to read you something from the book of Ben Sira, chapter 50. It's all about Shimon HaTzadik, but it talks about what was going on at the time that Alexander the Great got there. And this is where it's really important. Because if you don't know what happened, you can't build on any. You know, if you don't know, how can you build on something and be sure? You know, when they built this building, they didn't, you know, just build it on quicksand. You know, underneath this carpet, it's not quicksand, it's concrete. And it's enough concrete to hold this building up. When there's no foundation, you can't have a building. Yeah.
But underneath the concrete, the soil has
to be. Well, that too. Exactly. Absolutely. Because you can put concrete on quicksand, right? And it's going to sink too. You just sink in one big old block. So this is from the book of Ben Sira. There was a day when Alexander the Great, when he came down. Do you remember when we did the Melchizedek blessing in Jerusalem from the Hebrew University and the Mount Scopus? So you can imagine when they were coming down, because he was coming from the north down. Everybody knew he was coming, and he was conquering and plundering and killing and destroying everything in his path. And he got to Jerusalem, and something strange happened. I want to talk about that. This is from the book of Ben Sira, which is another of the Jewish writings that has a lot of history of what happened. What occurred on that day? It was on the day that the Samaritans requested the house of the Lord from Alexander the Macedonian in order to destroy it. And he gave it to them. He gave them permission to destroy it. Why would the Samaritans want to destroy the temple? Remember, they had their own temple among Gerizim. And this, they've been fighting since the time of the Maccabees, just killing each other. There was a lot of hatred. They were cousins. A lot of hatred, a lot of bad blood that had been going back and forth to where the Samaritans wanted to destroy the temple. And as they're watching Alexander the Great come in, they know exactly what's going to happen. They say, hey, let us to go destroy it. Can we go destroy it? Is what they're asking him. And word got back to a Shimon HaTzadik, and his name says that Shimon Simon the Righteous. Who was he? He was the high priest. Hey, the Samaritans are making a deal with Alexander the Great to come and just sack the temple as he's going south. And here's what happened. People came and informed the high priest, Shimon HaTzadik, of what had transpired. What did he do? He donned the priestly vestments and wrapped himself in the priestly vestments. And the nobles of the Jewish people were with him with torches of fire in their hands. And all that night, these are the representatives of the Jewish people approached from this side, and those, the armies of Alexander and the Samaritans, their cousins, approached from that side until dawn when they finally saw one another. When dawn arrived, Alexander said to the Samaritans, who are these people coming to meet us? They said to him, these are the Jews who rebelled against you. When he reached Antipatris, the sun shone and there were two camps. The two camps met each other. When Alexander saw Shimon HaTzadik, he descended from his chariot and bowed before him. His escort said to him, should an important king such as you bow to this Jew? He said to them, I do so because the image of this man's face is victorious before me on my battlefields. When I fight, I see his image going before me as a sign of victory, and therefore I know he has supreme sanctity. The temple was world renowned. People would come from Asia, would come from the Middle East, Africa, Europe, to come worship the one true God at the temple. The temple wasn't just some little thing and nobody knew anything about. No, what is that? No, everybody knew about it. Alexander knew about it. And he comes and he bows down out of respect. Remember, he's used to worshiping pagan gods, many of them. So for him to bow down to the high priest of the Jewish people, knowing what he knows about them, it's not a big deal in his mind. And he recognizes that he's different than the Samaritans. He wasn't bowing down to any of the Samaritans, to the high priest of the Samaritan temple. He's bowing down to the highest spiritual authority on earth at the time. He's bowing down to. And look what he says here. Who are these people who want to destroy it? The Jews said to him, they are these Samaritans who stand before you. He said to them, if so, they are delivered into your hands to deal with them as you please. He's asking who wants to destroy the temple. They say these Samaritans do, and he tells the Jews, you go ahead and you can kill them. And here's what happens. Immediately they stabbed the Samaritans in their heels and hung them from their horses' tails and continued to drag them over the thorns and thistles until they reached Mount Gerizim where their temple was. When they arrived at Mount Gerizim, where the Samaritans had their temple, they plowed it over and seeded the area with leeks, a symbol of total destruction. It was pagan. This was just as they had sought to do at the house of the Lord, and they made it a day of festival to celebrate the salvation of the temple and the defeat of the Samaritans. We all have family who not only do they not want to serve the God of Israel, but they want to destroy us and destroy the things we're doing just out of sheer hatred. But yet they love God. They have their own temple, right? Let me read the rest of this. It's apparent from this baraita. A baraita is a story about something that's given to give a little more understanding, similar to Midrash. So now you see what just happened. So Shimon HaTzadik, he goes, these Samaritans are dead. He's already had Alexander the Great bow down to him. Now he's one-on-one with him talking. outside the gates of Jerusalem, outside the temple. And he talks to him and he says, he makes a deal with him. Can you please not destroy the temple? What can we do so you don't sack the temple? I don't know, what can we do? And so what happens? So he was able to keep Alexander from sacking Jerusalem. Shimon HaTzadik, he was the high priest. This is what I want to get to. He was the last Cohen to use the pronounced name of God to bless the people. Shimon HaTzadik. And he was there at the temple that was rebuilt when they came. It was basically the last temple. He was there hundreds of years before Messiah. So the last time the holy name of God was used by God on the Temple Mount was hundreds of years prior to Messiah. When it was available. That's true. They wouldn't use it, but on Yom Kippur, the high priest. No. So basically, he never used it again. He was the last one to use it on Yom Kippur. Well, it blessed the people in that the name was said and uttered. It was uttered in the Holy of Holies during the Yom Kippur. There may have been some other times, in very particular times, by the high priest. But No. He wasn't. And this is why there's the big problem with people who try to say it today and pronounce it. It's a problem. It's not a problem. The pronunciation is one thing, but the whole, why are you using it? No one has been called to use it. What are you doing? You're making something up out of nothing that has nothing to do with a biblical anything. It's just a made up thing. So let me keep going here. So he was able to keep Alexander from sacking Jerusalem. When the rabbis talked about why was he the last Cohen to use the name? We'll talk about that, but one of them is because of, they say he just forgot it. But they also talk about the Lord removed part of his presence and his approval, for lack of a better word, from the Jewish people. And so no one ever uttered it again. No one was ever told to utter it again for hundreds of years prior to Messiah. Now, this is not, just so we, because you brought this up in another teaching, this is not the same Shimon in the temple who dedicated Yeshua and Athe. That's a different Shimon, different one. This is too early for that to be the same person. So let me keep going here. As they talk, conditions were set for Alexander not to sack Jerusalem. They made an agreement. Anybody know what the agreement entailed? Yeah. Sure.
So what about all the young people that?
The name wasn't pronounced. It wouldn't violate anything because God, they couldn't pronounce it. So there was nothing they can do. If they didn't know, they couldn't pronounce it. Some say that he could no longer utter it. However, all of that being said, he wasn't the last high priest of the temple. So the next high priest didn't have the name and couldn't utter the name. But we'll get into a little bit more of that later on as we continue through this. Well, it did. It did. And then what ended up happening to the whole temple later on? It got sacked by the Romans. Yeah. So no, you're absolutely right. And we'll talk about that a little bit as we keep going. So anybody know any of the conditions? Yeah. That's not one of the conditions, because that would have been violating Torah to build a statue. No, you're talking about during Hanukkah, when they put a statue of Zeus in the temple. That's what you're thinking about. But yeah, no. So the conditions were that every year Israel must pay tribute to the Greeks, to Alexander, in the form of money, food, etc. Shimon HaTzadik said, okay, we can do that. And then for 1 year, this is going to come into what you guys were talking about earlier, for a year, all the sons of Israel, all were to be named and must be named Alexander. Okay, so now we're cooking. This is BC. This is about 333 BC. Yeah. And all of this was okay with the Anshei Knesset HaGadol. They had to look at the whole thing, the whole, are we going to let you just come and wipe us out after we've come out of exile? Or are we going to accept a few of your terms that don't allow us to totally break Torah? He didn't, like he said, he didn't tell them to set up a statue. No, they would have said, we can't do that. It breaks Torah. You're setting up a statue to worship. So for a year, all the Jewish boys had to be named after Alexander. And because of this, within Judaism, it became okay to have Greek names. So that's why you see a lot of the Hellenized, what we refer to as Hellenized Jews, who had Greek names within Scripture. That was the beginning of that. It became acceptable for that because it didn't violate. There was no Torah given. You had to have a Jewish name. There were a lot of famous people, sages, scholars, and even though they were Jewish, they had names. They had Greek names. And then the last thing that they had to agree to was to create a calendar, which they later called the Minyan Shdarot calendar, to commemorate the day that Alexander the Great arrived in Jerusalem. Crazy, huh? But just to show you how lenient some of the things were, they didn't create the calendar immediately. They created it 12 years later and set up the day marking, they started the calendar on the day marking 1,000 years since the Exodus from Egypt. So then they would have a way to know to follow that calendar. Well, we know the Exodus from Egypt was the year, and we just add 12 years to it to come up with the year or the time on the Minyan Shdarot calendar. And that calendar lasted for thousands of years, and it even appears on ancient marital ketubas or marriage certificates, marriage contracts. And there are Brit Milahs or certificates of circumcision dated in Minyan Shdarot. Okay, so after all these conditions were agreed upon, what happened? Alexander decides to do something every Gentile is called to do who wants to be connected to God. Keep Torah, right? How do you keep Torah when the temple is around? You bring in sacrifices. And not just sacrifices for sin, but sacrifices of rejoicing, of thanksgiving. So anybody have any questions or thoughts? Because I can see your face right here and thinking you're thinking something. Thought, question, comment? Okay. So they led Alexander into the city, and they allowed him to bring a sacrifice to the temple, which Gentiles were allowed to do. Most of the areas were for Gentiles there, the biggest areas. After he left, he bypassed the temple in Jerusalem. He kept going south. And this was allowed because Shimon HaTzadik, Shimon the Great, negotiated with him. But remember, we talked about this idea of cleaving to a tzaddik. So you could see the people, this is prior to Messiah, would pray and ask God for something in the name of Shimon HaTzadik, by the merit of Shimon HaTzadik, what he's done. Lord, grant me this in the merit of what he's done. This is the idea of cleaving to a tzaddik that you see today where people say, in the name of Jesus, I pray. Or in the merit of Yeshua, that's what they're saying. In his merit, by what he's done, I pray that you would answer this prayer. That's where the idea and understanding is. He passed the temple. Let's see. Okay, for Jewish. The Minyan Shdarot calendar is not used anymore. But this is how Jerusalem came under Greek rule.
Mm-hmm. It says Alexander said that he had seen the high priest in a dream before embarking on the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Further in his dream, the high priest had assured Alexander that he would be victorious over the Persians.
Yeah.
Alexander is next taken into Jerusalem, where he offers a sacrifice to God.
Yeah.
The temple, according to the high priest's direction.
Yeah, so you see he came and bowed down with that in mind.
And it says Josephus offers another important but highly controversial detail about Alexander's brief visit to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
While in the city, a scroll is brought to Alexander. It says that when the book of Daniel was showed him, wherein Daniel declared that one of the Greeks should destroy the empire of the Persians, he supposed that he himself was that person intended. And as he was then glad, he dismissed the multitude before the presence.
Yeah.
So no doubt he identified himself with the male goat from Daniel chapter 8 who trampled down the Persians.
Go ahead.
And then it says that many of the boys in Jerusalem that year were named Alexander in honor of the pagan conqueror. The Yiddish variation Sender.
Sender, yeah.
Jewish name.
Yeah, a derivative of, yeah. Absolutely. So you see, he already came down there with God dealing with him about sparing Jerusalem, all at the same time when you have Shimon HaTzadik, this righteous man who's losing the pronunciation of the name, and then he'll be the last one to pronounce the name. So we see this as you look through biblical history. You see Israel kind of goes up, and Israel comes down. This is a time when Israel was being diminished, yeah.
Was there anything that was passed down by the priests themselves or passed down to God?
A combination of the both, I believe, because it started with God. Yeah, and God didn't, yeah, so in either case, God didn't show anybody else. So, and it wasn't, and... But the idea, so the rabbis talked about, it said the Shekinah in the second temple, it was diminished. It was lessened.
So would you say that was like as they lost their relationship with God, that they were no longer allowed, because they no longer had the reverence for God? Or their relationship changed?
As a nation,
right.
Things, as a nation, It always, that's what I'm saying, it's always kind of, yeah. The time of this high priest, that was kind of, I don't want to say the beginning, but it was part of the descent into eventually they didn't repent like they should have. You know, Messiah comes, they didn't receive Messiah, the temple sacked. But on the other hand, they couldn't all repent and they couldn't all receive Messiah because God blocked them as a nation from receiving him so that the Gentiles could come in. So it's both. It's not either or. So that's why you can't just pin down something and say, see, this is it. That's it. And that's, you can't do that. There's more. Thank you. You're here finally. That's why you can't do that. And it's, you know, within music, there's definite absolutes. But then there's a flow and there's rhythm and there's things that are outside of what's written on the music sheet that exist. And they exist just like this with music. As a matter of fact, people who play by ear, sing by ear, different things without reading music, they're actually operating outside of what's written and the hard and fast rules, right? You can do that. You see this idea of what's written is expressed by how things are done. And you can't just separate them and say that, you know, I'm just going to do things any old kind of way with no sense of, you can only do that if you're not concerned about having some type of uniformity and some type of order. You can do whatever you want to do, but you can't say that it's from that. So it's the same kind of idea. In the Peshitta, which is the Aramaic text of the New Testament, it says the name wasn't used for 200 years before Messiah. So you get this idea. And they don't know exactly when, but they know that according to Judaism, Shimon HaTzadik was the last one to use it. Yeah. It talks about the name not used for 200 years before Messiah. See, Bill? Oh, what is it? The Peshitta is the Aramaic text of the New Testament.
The Aramaic version of the New Testament.
Yeah. It talks about the, in the, yes, and some of it talks about that, yeah. I don't know exactly where it is in there, but that's the understanding from the Peshitta, yeah. I think it may be part of a commentary. I'm not sure exactly. I'd have to check. Yeah.
I have a Bible that is supposedly the translation out of Peshitta into English.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure it's more than what I have translated. Because mine is just
a few.
The Bible, the what we call the
right.
New Testament, and it's done. Got the name of the man who does it.
Yeah.
He's an Aramaic speaker and mm-hmm. he belongs to some Eastern Orthodox thing.
Sure, yeah, they use it a lot in Middle East. Well, and so the thing about it is that, you know, if you want to read what scriptures the disciples were reading and what later on, you know, the Jerusalem Council, what they had, they had the Peshitta. And they had the Hebrew translations. And if they had Greek, they understood and wrote Greek, but they could write and read Greek in Hebrew thought. So kind of like I can say Spanish words in English with American thought. You know, I can say taco and burrito, yeah. But be thinking about Taco Bell, right? Well, that's not Mexican thought. That's American, right, exactly. That's just, you know, American, you know, same words, totally different meaning and understanding. So that being said, if you guys ever ask me to go pick you up a burrito or a taco, please make sure you tell me where you're wanting me to go, because I may go to Taco Bell.
Really?
All right, anybody have any other thoughts?
So in that time, Alexander got to Jerusalem. Did Israel was going into idolatry or something?
Well, no. They had just come back from Babylon, and they came back from Babylon. They brought the synagogue system. And because they had a synagogue, there was less idolatry because people who live far away from the temple. They had a synagogue in their own community they could go to and study Torah and do the prayers of the temple, have a court system. They had all their needs met there. So there wasn't idolatry like there was. And there wasn't this assimilation where they became like everybody else because, no, we're our own community. We have all of our stuff. We take care of one another. That's where they were. And the synagogue had been up and running and things were good. And all of a sudden, I mean, the priesthood had been reestablished. And now you have, okay, well, it was fine. We were under Persian rule because under Cyrus and Darius, remember, that started the whole move to come back. But now we don't have them ruling anymore. We've got Alexander the Great, this young guy from Europe who's coming in. And so it totally shifted things again. Yeah. That's basically it. Well, let me say this. And then later on, after Alexander the Great, who came next? Romans came after the Greeks. We're going to talk more about what happened under the Greeks next time we teach on this. We'll go to the next step. But you see the stuff builds on top. And if you don't hear, you don't understand or know it, you can come up with a bunch of things. Yeah, what were you going to say?
No, I was just remembering the story of the Samaritan that takes care of the man who was...
Right. The Jewish man, yeah. Well,
because they're looked upon as the wretched, but yet they're pointed out as the ones who actually did the right thing.
Well, they're looked upon as the wretched. That particular Good Samaritan, he is looked upon as righteous for what he did. Again, what he did, not what he said, right? We're back to the same thing that God looks to see what we do as opposed to what we just say or whether we say anything at all, but he still looks at what we do. Yeah. No, no, I'm just saying, he didn't say anything. He did. God looked upon what he did, regardless if he said anything or not. But he looked upon what he did. That's why he was called the Good Samaritan. But again, right, he was a good Samaritan. He was a good one from these other ones that hated us. You know, kind of like in Russia today, there's a war going on, and some Russians call him the good Ukrainian because he took care of a Russian soldier who his own people just left him for dead, and they just left the battlefield, left the guy for dead. But some Ukrainian who were fighting against him, we hate, came and took care of this. It'd be something like that. Yeah.
I didn't realize the depth of their hatred.
Yeah. Right.
A little bit up to get
context. Yeah. And that gives you, so whenever you read that verse again, you'll never feel the same about
right.
it. See? So this all goes into what we've been talking about all day. When you have the more information about some things, and it totally changes your whole of everything. So yeah, and Nikki, what did you want me to say? What did you say, Case? Well, because again, when you go back and you look at, you know, in effect, they're Edomites too. You can look at Edom as anybody other than the house of Israel who's not grafted onto Israel in some form or fashion. They're Edomites. Some are more outright hatred. Some are more just indifferent towards Israel. But at some point, they left. They left the house of Israel. Just like Midian, the Midianites. Well, you have Jethro. He was a good Midianite, right? And he came and he grafted himself onto Israel. But the rest of the Midianites, not so much. You see all the wars and everything. Yeah. No, they didn't make it from the temple. They created their own temple, which God never had anything to do with. Right. No, they could go to the temple. They could go to the temple, but they couldn't go to the temple as Jews. They had to abide by the, like everybody else. But they didn't. But they had already left Israel when they could have still come back and see. Sometimes even Jewish people need to be grafted back on. There's Jews who need to be grafted back onto Israel too. But it, for them, yeah, they had already left, and yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot
for discovering
Messiah.
There's a lot. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, whenever you have that, you also have the other, you know, whatever extreme you have the other extreme kind of cooking at the same time. So it's like God's children are coming up and the devil's children are coming up too. Mm-hmm.
Well, because some people are like, oh, you know, Satan thought he was going to have his way and have some fun and he got worshiped for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
The young people who really truly need God to awaken them and to bring life to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really interesting what's going on. They're like, oh, yeah, this has been on for over 2 weeks and we got 5 minutes. It's great.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't want to comment too much on that. There's talk about that, though, and seeing what comes of it. You know, a lot of people, see, this comes back to the same thing about what people say and what they hear. And emotionalism and all of that, that's there. So how do we know? You have to wait and see.
That if there is even one person who is being blessed and who comes to a relationship in God and or who discovers or even rediscovers God, which I'm understanding is happening.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just amazing. There's people who are coming who have strayed away from God.
Yeah.
And who are realizing that they really need God. And,
yeah.
You know, and if nothing else comes of it,
mm-hmm.
that has come of it, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with what you're, I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but there's more to it than that. Sorry, Therese, give me your chance. And the reason I say that is because there's a lot of indication in the back channels to say this, it was staged and it was planned. All of this, and well, let me just say this, I'm just throwing this out there. You can, you know, I'm not here to change what you believe or anything. I'm just telling you what's out there too. And then last week, Rick Warren decides to get involved. So there you go. So I saw your eyes. So there you go. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I think so, a lot of people are going to try and latch on to try and,
yeah.
you know,
them. Well, I mean, maybe so. But again, still, yeah, that still doesn't change the fact. You know what I mean? He's still going and bringing there, and all of a sudden he's going to go and hijack it for what? He didn't, you know. Whole nother, but anyway, within Judaism, the idea, and this is what you heard Rabbi say this last week, within Judaism, the idea is you see miracles, run from them. Don't go seeking miracles, because if something is an actual miracle, it'll stand, and you'll know it. You don't have to go and try and jack something up and hype something up. It'll spread, and everybody will know without anybody's trying to finagle. So this whole idea of them is okay. Well, everything you said, if that all happens, that's a good thing. I'm not coming against it. But just like Gamaliel said, well, if this is of God, you can't stop it. And if it isn't of God, it'll just fall apart.
Amen.
So I'm not coming against it to try and stop it by any means. I'm watching and just seeing, like everybody else, is what comes out of it. The thing about it, if all of a sudden, say in a week or two, this thing just fizzles and then 6 months, no one will remember anything about it. Then what are you going to, is that going to change how you feel about it now? And the things that they're proclaiming. So that's why, that's where I come from. I don't, if God is doing it, wonderful. There's a lot to be about it. That's it, you know. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing about it too, and I, you know, I'm always on this, but the times of the Gentiles is coming to an end. What does that even mean? That means that there's enough Jews, Messianic Jews, to actually be able to lead some things, and enough Messianic Gentiles to come under and help them do that, to where there's not this need for what God allowed to go on and use in the church age.
So my understanding is that during this last mm-hmm. part,
you can talk about that, but even that saying is very loaded with, that can mean a whole lot of things to different, whoever you're asking about that. When you look at it biblically, here's what we know. We know the prophets, nine of them, just Rabbi was talking about last week, nine of the prophets talked about the destruction coming to Edom. Okay, let's talk about that. There's that. Well, yeah, but let me develop this a little more. Then we also know, you read the book of Revelation, that there's destruction coming to Jerusalem. And then we know, when does Messiah come back? It's connected to when his people finally say, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. We recognize you.